I'm Sheila Cast, and this is Midday. Theft, breaking and entering, trespassing, common crimes that bring teenagers into contact with the juvenile justice system, contact that can set up a criminal record, detention, and a high risk of committing another crime. Today we look at an alternative, teen court, which brings young people before a jury of their peers for punishment. Can teen court interrupt the school-to-prison pipeline? We speak to Leslie Wright, Director of City Programs for the Citizenship Law-Related Education Program, which oversees teen courts in Maryland, plus Gavin Potashnik, Chief of the Juvenile Division of the Baltimore City State's Attorney's Office, and Mark Friedenthal, Public Defender in the city's Juvenile Court Division, tell us how teen court delivers meaningful justice while saving money. That's Midday after the news. Welcome to Midday, everyone. I'm Sheila Cast. Interesting show today. Glad you're with us to share it. The topic we'll be talking about relates to some of the week's headlines, like President Obama's executive order banning solitary confinement for juvenile offenders in federal prisons, and the Supreme Court's decision calling for review of life sentences without parole meted out to teenagers. We continue to look at juvenile justice, but with a different focus, a focus on another set of young offenders, teenagers accused of a misdemeanor that, even though it's a minor crime, might pull them into the juvenile justice system. We're going to look at an alternative, which you might not have heard of, teen court. Maryland's Department of Juvenile Services reports that last year, more than 23,000 young people came into contact with the juvenile justice system, primarily because of complaints from schools and from law enforcement. A third of those young people were brought in for property crimes, such as breaking and entering or theft. Reporting by the Baltimore Sun found that on any given day in 2014, more than 1,000 Maryland youths were in a detention center or treatment facility. That's an expensive option. The federal government estimates that it costs $88,000 a year to confine a juvenile offender. And what happens after their release? Of young offenders released in 2014, the state found that 1 year afterward, about half had been rearrested, about one out of five was convicted, and more than one out of 10 were incarcerated again. Teen court boasts a much lower recidivism rate, just 15%, about one out of six. This option offers a young person the opportunity to stand before a jury of her peers and atone for minor crimes and get connected to social services. With me to tell us more about teen court is Leslie Wright. Leslie Wright is the director of city programs for the Citizenship Law-Related Education Program, which oversees several programs in Maryland, including legal internships, a mock trial competition, and teen court. The Citizenship Law-Related Education Program is funded in part by the Maryland State Bar Association, the Department of Juvenile Services, the State Department of Education, and several foundations. Leslie Wright, welcome to Midday.
Thank you.
So give us some background about how teen court came to be in Maryland.
Well, the Baltimore City Teen Court Program has been in existence for about 17 years. And it came into our hands at that time when different partners, Public Defender's Office, the Baltimore City Police Department, Department of Juvenile Services, had seen this type of a program in another state. And they thought that it would work here in Baltimore City based on the number of arrests that they were seeing in the juvenile system.
So Baltimore City was the first in Maryland?
Actually, Montgomery County was the first, and then Baltimore City was the second teen court.
And how many teen courts operate now in Maryland?
In the state of Maryland, we have eight, but ideally we would like to see one in every jurisdiction. Currently, there is over 1,200 teen courts operating across the United States. It's the fastest growing form of diversion.
The fastest growing form of, and when we talk about diversion, we're talking about diverting young people out of the mainstream juvenile justice system.
Exactly. What we like to say about our teen court program is it is both diversion and leadership. The diversion aspect is we are diverting them from the juvenile system, yet holding them accountable for their actions. It's a restorative justice model. The leadership aspect of the program is the fact that we recruit other young people from across the city who are just as at risk as the youth who get in trouble with the police to come and volunteer for the program, serve as jurors and other court role models.
I want to hear more later about the kids who serve on the juries. But let me ask you first, how do kids get referred to teen court?
So currently we have four major sources for referrals. We can receive our cases directly from the Baltimore City School Police, and we can receive them from the Baltimore City Police from juvenile booking before they even touch the juvenile system. However, what we were finding over the past few years is that some youth who were eligible for a diversion option and may benefit more from a diversion option were still getting into the juvenile system. So over the last year, we have developed a strong partnership with the state's attorney's office and the Department of Juvenile Services, as well as the courts.
And so, well, what kinds of cases can come before teen court?
So we primarily focus on misdemeanor offenses, and we break them down into four levels. The first level would be minor cases such as trespassing, loitering, and it can go all the way to a level four, which would be a possession of a deadly weapon. For our youth, that would be mace, a pocket knife. We also do take CDS possessions. That's controlled substance. So it's only for marijuana, and it would have to be 10 grams or less.
Okay. That is Leslie Wright, Director of City Programs for the Citizenship Law-Related Education Program, which oversees about 18 courts in Maryland. If you're intrigued by this idea, why? What interests you about it? Does it seem likely to solve a problem, or do you think it might create one? Call us or send us an email. Our local number is 410-662-8780. We have a toll-free number. If you're a bit away, that is 866-661-9309. Or you can send us an email at midday@wypr.org. So pull us into what happens. What happens after a teen court agrees to take on a case, Leslie Wright?
So what the process is, we receive the case from our referral source. And at our office, we conduct an intake. That allows us the ability for the youth to admit responsibility for their action.
And that is necessary, right, for them to continue on this court. They have to basically say they're guilty of what they're accused of.
Well, it's not that we are looking for a judgment of guilt or not guilt. What we are looking for and what we focus on is them admitting responsibility for their actions, that they made a choice that resulted in them getting arrested or having a formal charge brought against them. Once they admit that responsibility, then they are held accountable by a jury of their peers.
And tell me what that looks like. Walk me through that.
So what happens is we actually use a courthouse here in Baltimore City, one of the district courthouses. And every other week, we hold teen court sessions. We model a courtroom setting. The teen court volunteers take on roles such as a clerk, a bailiff, a jury foreperson. And we can have anywhere from 5 to 12 jurors in the courtroom. We run the model like a grand jury model. With that being said, the youth are able to question the youth directly. We do not have any witnesses in the courtroom, and we do not have the youth represented. The youth represents themselves. We have volunteer judges and or lawyers who come and sit and oversee the hearing.
Let me make sure I understand that. So the volunteer judges and lawyers, they are not other teenagers, or are they?
They are not. They
Who are they?
They are from the judiciary system. So we have district court judges, circuit court judges, administrative judges, public defenders, private lawyers, state's attorneys who come and volunteer because they believe in this model. They believe in the program and the ability to give these youth a second chance. It also gives the youth an opportunity to see the court setting differently. Many of our youth, unfortunately, have been involved in the court system, whether themselves personally or someone in their family. And so they don't always have a very good outlook on the court system and being fair. And so we pride ourselves in educating the youth about the court system, about the fairness of the system. And it also gives them an opportunity to interact with the judges and lawyers on a different level.
Explain more of that to me. What is it? First of all, how real does this seem to a young person who's before a jury of their peers, which doesn't look like probably any jury they've seen before, much younger jury? I mean, does it really send a message to a young person who's before that jury that I can learn something about the overall legal system from this experience?
We believe it does. And the reason being is the youth see sometimes their own face in the face of a youth respondent. They can relate to them on a level much differently than we as adults because they are out in the community. They understand why somebody might be carrying a pocket knife because they have to take two buses from the west side of town to go to school on the east side where they're not familiar with people. They have a different level of insight than we would as an adult. And so because we model a court setting, we take it from the beginning to the end. They are sworn in. There's an oath of confidentiality. We follow a script. So it does replicate the court system. Once the youth have listened and questioned the youth respondent, then they are able to deliberate and decide on different consequences or sanctions for that youth.
Let me just, you've been using the word respondent, and I assume you do that purposefully because they're not called defendants in the juvenile system, but essentially it is the youth who has been accused of something and has taken responsibility is the respondent.
That is correct.
So what types of sentences does the teen court prescribe?
Okay. So every youth is sanctioned to what we call jury duties, where that youth respondent comes back and sits on the other side of the bench, and they actively participate in another youth's case. The other thing is everyone is given some type of community service. The reason is because we feel if we're going to demonstrate restorative justice, the youth respondents need to understand that their actions somehow made an impact on their community, whether it was with something in the home, something in the school, or the community at large. We also use that as an ability to connect the youth to resources.
What kind of resources?
So meaning if a youth, say a youth has an interest in the arts and maybe has never heard of the Creative Alliance, or they've never heard of local agencies within their neighborhood, we try to connect them to those agencies so they can do some community service, explore an area of interest, and maybe continue on in that setting and not go back and recidivate.
Leslie Wright, we need to take a short break here. And when we come back, we're going to talk about how teen court is making a difference in the lives of teens in Baltimore. Leslie Wright, who is director of city programs for the Citizenship Law Related Education Program, which oversees about 8 teen courts in Maryland, is going to be with us for the hour. We'd like to hear from you. Did you face legal trouble as a young person? Would teen court have been useful to you? Or do you think steeper penalties would do more to dissuade juvenile offenders from reoffending? You can call us at 410-662-8780. That's our local number. We have a toll-free number, 1-866-661-9309. Or you can send us an email at midday@wypr.org. We've got more people to join the conversation when we come back. I'm Sheila Cast. Stay with us through a short break. Welcome back to Midday, everybody. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking about teen court, considered an alternative to the traditional juvenile justice system. Teen court allows young offenders who've been charged with misdemeanor crimes, like nonviolent crimes like shoplifting, loitering, disorderly conduct, trespassing, to appear before a jury of their peers for punishment. The Baltimore City Teen Court has operated for 17 years, is that correct? And has diverted more than 1,600 young people from the Department of Juvenile Services. Leslie Wright, director of the Maryland Teen Court's Baltimore City Initiatives, is with us. And I want to introduce two other people who work closely with the Teen Court. Gavin Potashnik is chief of the Juvenile Division of the Baltimore City State's Attorney's Office. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
And Mark Friedenthal is an assistant public defender in the Baltimore City Juvenile Court Division. Thanks for coming in. Gavin Potashnik, I understand that over the past year, Baltimore has made some changes in how young people are referred to teen court. Tell me what's changed.
Well, there's been a renewed focus in trying to get youth diverted out of the system. So utilizing existing diversion options like teen court has been a priority for us because we strongly feel that youth being in these programs actually makes a difference in making sure that they don't reoffend. So looking at the problem from the perspective of trying to keep kids out of the system has been something that we've been trying to do.
And so does this mean that you're referring more cases?
Well, there's several different modalities of referral. And from the state's attorney's office perspective, once a case has been petitioned and it's in court, there are multiple opportunities for us to assess a case and make a determination as to whether or not diversion is a viable option. So we, at various times, whether it is in the arraignment stage or the adjudication stage, which is the trial stage, or even after the adjudication stage, there's some efforts being made to assess whether or not a youth is right for different programs.
So while Gavin Potashnik is talking, Mark Friedenthal, an assistant public defender in the Baltimore City Juvenile Court Division, is nodding his head. And, you know, I think a lot of people are thinking it's not all that usual for the prosecutor and the defender, the public defender, to be in agreement on something. Why, Mark Friedenthal, is teen court something you both can agree on?
Well, it's an opportunity to divert cases away from the system and avoid a youth having a delinquent record. And the more opportunities we can do to divert cases away, the better that is for the youth and for the system in general.
But Gavin Potashnik, do you ever see a situation where a kid just doesn't get the message through teen court? It just isn't tough enough.
Well, yes. And the way that we try to structure it is we give a youth a chance to participate in these programs. So we operate something called a mutual postponement, which is a mechanism by which a child is given a certain number of months to complete the program. And if they don't, then we have the opportunity as the state to bring that youth back in and proceed as if they never were diverted in the first place.
So when you say complete the program, you're talking about, I mean, Leslie Wright told us that community service is almost always part of what a young person is told to do by the jury of his peers. So that's what they haven't done? When they haven't completed the program, they haven't done their public service? Or what else does that refer to?
Well, there's a couple of things that could happen. A youth may not even show up to teen court. or a youth may not complete the appropriate sanction, whatever that sanction could be, or the youth couldn't complete their community service hours, or during the process, the youth could reoffend in another criminal matter, which is a key to us that that youth is not ripe to participate in the program.
We have quite a few people who want to be part of this conversation. Let's go to Mike in North Baltimore. Mike, welcome to Midday.
Well, thanks. Hi, everyone. I'm glad to hear that the state's attorney's office has added energy to the process. I actually was going to ask Ms. Wright what were the challenges, but I guess I'd also like to ask if it's possible for Baltimore City, what is the age range of the participants, say, in the last year or the last 18 months?
So we serve youth ages 11 to 17. I would say the average age of the youth is between 14 and 16 years.
And, Mike, did you have another question? Mike?
Yes.
Did you have another question?
Yeah, well, I guess the challenge, having worked with youth myself throughout most of my career, you know, the supervising youth and community service, finding adults to partner at each stage are always challenges. And so I'm wondering, and for your experience, what maybe, again, in the last 18 months or so, what have been the challenges that have been striking you in your program?
Mike, thanks for the call. I think that's another question for you, Leslie Wright.
Probably the biggest challenges that we face with the youth in Baltimore City are our youth are very transient, meaning they're not always located at the original address when we start the process. So communication with the youth can pose difficulty. But as far as completing sanctions, there is some difficulty with some community sites realizing the benefits of working with a youth and having them complete their community service at that site. And that's why we will allow them to use multiple sites to be able to complete their service learning hours.
Thanks, Mike. Thanks for the call. We're talking about teen court today on Midday on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cast. I'm here with Leslie Wright, who is the director of Maryland Teen Courts Baltimore City Initiatives, and with Gavin Potashnik, chief of the Juvenile Division for the Baltimore City State's Attorney's Office, and Mark Friedenthal, an assistant public defender in the Baltimore City Juvenile Court Division. And I'd like to pull Donald into the conversation. Donald is a young person in Baltimore City who went through teen court. Donald, welcome to Midday.
Hi, thank you.
Thanks. Thank you for calling us. Just tell me a bit about your case. What did you do that got you in front of teen court, and what was your experience in teen court?
It was January 21st last year. My birthday is the 25th. It was real close to my birthday.
We just missed your birthday. Happy birthday.
Thank you. I was chilling with my friends and some friends that's real close that I consider family. And basically, we were at the wrong place at the wrong time. And out of the group of us, I was the only one to get grabbed. And it kind of had me look at things differently when I got arrested. I met Miss Leslie. When I first met Miss Leslie, I was all dry, I didn't care about anything, but she was just always happy, smiling, and energetic, like bright, energetic. And that kind of rubs off on people that she's around. And she basically told me about teen court and what I had to do, and I was just like, okay, just want to get this over with so I can go on about my life.
And so what did getting it over with entail for you? Well, first of all, tell me what that was like, facing a jury of people like your age. Did that feel like? Was it scary or was it comforting?
It's kind of both. Because now we're so used to older people judging us that we don't really have any feelings towards it. But when you have younger people looking at you and telling you that what you have done was wrong, it kind of make you think about your life. But then it was comforting because now you also have younger people judging you that can say, okay, I understand, or I can relate to this. Whereas older people are more straight to the point of, it was wrong, you shouldn't have done it. But now with younger people, you have, it was wrong, you shouldn't have done it. I understand what you were thinking, but now you just have to think even more and think differently.
And what did the jury tell you to do in terms of a punishment?
For my sanction, I had 40 hours of community service and 3 number of assigned jury duties to be completed within 90 days. And I thought that would be, once I finished with my sanctions, that would be the end of teen court. I did my 40 hours at a recreational center called the Powell Center. And I did jury duty. I went to the training, and then I went to court to see other people that were following my footsteps.
Donald, what, as you look back on it, what do you think? Where do you think you learned more from appearing before a teen court jury yourself, or from serving on other teen court juries?
I think you learn more serving.
Why is that?
I always thought that learning my lesson was when I first got arrested. I mean, I learned the lesson from that, but my biggest life-changing point was when, after I finished my 3 number of assigned jury duties, and here Ms. Leslie begged me to come back, saying, come back, you're coming back, and I'm just like, no, Ms. Leslie, I'm not. But then going back and then turning into a volunteer, that was the big life-changing point there.
So let me make sure I have this straight. Your sanctions included serving on 3 other juries.
Yes.
But then, and you thought that was going to be it.
Yeah, I was.
And then you were persuaded to keep involved with teen court.
Yes.
Why?
It's like a. You see.
Yeah. What are you thinking of?
I seen how we play roles in court, such as the bailiff. You have the jury foreperson. You have the judge. You have people that play roles. But little do we don't really pay attention to that. While we're in court, we're more than just the jurors. We're also mentors. We're mentors to people that are younger than us that come in as respondents, and then you have people that are sometimes older than some of the jurors but still look to us as mentors. We feel like we play the role of mentors. And mentoring somebody and then having somebody come to you and talk to you and say, I understand, and trying to change their life, that's a big hold on somebody's heart, knowing that you changed somebody's mindset when they were going down the wrong path, for them to want to do better.
So, Donald, you're still in school, high school?
Still in high school, 12th grade year, last year.
And what are your plans now?
I want to go to college. I applied to 2, Garrett and Allegheny. I got accepted at Garrett. I went and took my Air Force test, my practice test. I'm waiting to go take the actual test so I can go to the Air Force. If I go to Garrett, I'll be working on getting my certificates in paramedics and my AA in fine and performing arts.
And wow. I wish you could see all the heads nodding here in the studio. It's like there's a whole bunch of proud parents all feeling like they have some stake in your success. Before I let you go, Donald, let me see whether anybody here wants to either pick up on something Donald said that you think may have gone past us, or emphasize something.
I just want to congratulate Donald for what he's done and what he's going to do, and I wish him well in his future endeavors. I really do.
Thank you.
Donald, thank you so much for sharing your story with us.
No problem.
Thanks a lot, and good luck.
Thank you for having me.
That was Donald, who is what Leslie Wright would call a respondent, who was a respondent.
He is a former respondent who is now turned into a volunteer for teen court.
About how many volunteers does teen court have in Baltimore, in the city?
It can range anywhere from 20 to 50 active volunteers throughout the year.
And am I right? Mark Friedenthal, you volunteer in teen court too, right?
Yes, I do.
What do you do, or do you do different things, and what impact does it have on you as a public defender?
Ironically, I serve as a judge, which is a very interesting, different role for me. But I always say that teen court empowers kids to believe that they have a say. And they really, I mean, Donald is a great example of that. These are kids who get to see the system and get to participate in the system. And as a judge, I kind of sit back and let them do work their magic. These kids are very intuitive, and they are able to ferret out what's going on in each kid's experience, and each youth's experience, and they mete out the judgments, whatever the sanctions are, and they do a great job, and it really is an excellent program. And it's interesting to be the judge because I sit in a different role every day as a public defender than I do as a judge in teen court.
We have some folks who want to be part of this conversation. You could be part of it, too, if you give us a call at 410-662-8780 or send us an email at midday@wypr.org. James is calling from Northwest Baltimore. James, welcome to the show.
Good afternoon, Sheila, and thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Your guests. I'm an education advocate. I deal with a lot of children who have emotional and mental health issues that pertain to their academics. My question is, in this system, are any of the respondents given any type of diagnosis as far as mental health issues or, the educational disadvantage issues that they may have due to like ADHD or hyperaggressive behavior because of lead poison and things like that? Is there any diagnostics that the respondents go through before they actually participate in this process?
James, I appreciate the question. Who wants to pick that up? Leslie or Gavin?
Yeah, well, it's a very complicated question because obviously diversion is not the only thing that the juvenile system does. Diversion is a bright spot in the juvenile system, but the juvenile system is very expansive and it's designed to diagnose and treat children who are victims of lead issues or have substantial psychiatric problems. So, I do kind of want to put out there that the Department of Juvenile Services attempts to try to treat all children. And there are multiple places, residential treatment centers and other types of facilities that are set up just for treating kids who have substantial issues. And also regularly when youth are placed on probation, they're assessed for psychiatric issues, for educational issues, and the department's there to help them manage those issues and become successful in the long run.
Does it follow from that, though, that means that there are young people with mental health or behavioral issues who are not appropriate for teen court?
Absolutely. Teen court is a process that has a lot of self-motivation to it. So these youth have to be able to participate in the program, participate in the sanctions, be able to be productive on a jury. And of course, that's not going to be every single youth out there who is caught up in the juvenile system. You can't possibly expect a diversion program to manage a child who has a substantial psychiatric issues. It's just not set up for that.
Okay, but on the other hand, Leslie Wright mentioned to us a few minutes ago that teen court does link respondents up with resources. So I'm trying to sort of, maybe it varies.
Correct. And I think one of the things, if we look at a profile of many of the Baltimore City youth, you are going to find that they are a year or two behind grade level, that they live in certain communities which might prohibit them from attending school on a regular basis. So they already kind of come to the table with some issues. And one of the things that we pride ourselves on is the fact that we do try to provide a holistic approach. And sometimes by them coming to our setting, which is away from the juvenile system, we are able to connect them to resources or tell a parent how to advocate for their youth if they've been put on a 45-day suspension. So we do have partnerships and connections to resources within the community. And one of the other things that we have recently done is we have hired a social worker who will be working more directly with our youth to address some more serious issues.
We have to take a quick break here. When we come back, we're going to talk more about how Teen Court operates and how it is intervening in the lives of young people across Maryland. What strikes you as you listen to our panel, all of whom are fans of Teen Court? Are you skeptical? Think it's a risk? This is your chance to make your comment or ask your question. We'd love to hear from you. 410-662-8780 is our local number. Our email address is midday@wypr.org. I'm Sheila Cast. Stay with us through this short break. Welcome back to Midday, everyone. We're talking today about Teen Court, an alternative method of addressing cases involving juvenile offenders. Maryland has 8 active teen court programs. Baltimore City can take up to about 300 cases a year. My guests for the rest of the hour are Leslie Wright, Director of City Programs for the Citizenship Law-Related Education Program, which oversees Maryland's teen courts; Gavin Potashnik, Chief of the Juvenile Division of the Baltimore City State's Attorney's Office; and Mark Friedenthal, an Assistant Public Defender in the Baltimore City Juvenile Court Division. And Gavin Potashnik, there was a point you wanted to make about helping youth with mental health issues.
Yeah, I just wanted to underscore the point that youth, when they're assessed by any agency or in the system, there's a continuum that we have to kind of respect. That there's a low end where we have youth who have some minor educational issues, and then on the high end we have youth who have very substantial individual education plans or IEPs. So again, when we assess youth for the program, we have to make sure that we are sending youth who are self-motivated, who can get through the program.
Chris is calling us from West Baltimore. Chris, welcome to Midday. Chris? There's no Chris. Okay, there was Chris. And Chris's question was one that's sort of in the back of my mind, too. If this is such a success, why hasn't it been expanded more? And in particular, Gavin Potashnik, I'm going to link that with something I wanted to ask you about. After the rioting in April, some high school students were arrested. Tell me whether there's a teen court connection to that. Were any of those arrests handled through teen court?
Well, unfortunately, the legislature and the statutes do not permit me to talk about individual cases for any youth under the age of 18 who's arrested in juvenile court, so I can't really comment on those.
You can't even profile in general.
I can't
this
even.
Unnamed teen, this is how it worked.
I can't really talk about individual stuff, but I can tell you that there are certain points in the process where a teen can be diverted. So abstractly, if a youth was arrested for a nonviolent misdemeanor offense, the police can divert such a child at a booking stage. The Department of Juvenile Services can divert such a child at an assessment intake stage. Or once a case is petitioned, the state's attorney's office can then assess for whether or not diversion is appropriate. So just generally speaking, at multiple stages, there are opportunities for diversion. With respect to your question about expansion of the program, you know, we are currently, and over the course of the year, our office has been working diligently to expand all diversion options, including teen courts. So we are trying to assess these programs and really try to harness them for their true value and potential.
Listeners, you can be part of this conversation. Our local number is 410-662-8780. Our email address is midday@wypr.org. Tim called us from Ellicott City. Tim, welcome to Midday.
Yeah, hi. How are you?
Just fine. How are you?
Good. Thank you for taking my call. I think I want to thank you for putting the program on, and it's terrifically informative. So my question is directly this. I'm an attorney, a former prosecutor, defense attorney. I've taught high school, and I want to know what the opportunities are for volunteer attorneys to get involved.
Anyone?
Yes. Yes, we definitely encourage adults and youth to volunteer for the program. You could go to our website, which is www.clrep.org, and you will see the Teen Court link, and there is also a volunteer link, and we can talk.
We will link to that on WIPR's Facebook page, because www.clrep.org is not the most felicitous website to remember, but there's obviously a lot of information there. Osiris is calling us from West Baltimore. Osiris, welcome to the show.
Thank you. My question is, I work with the public school system as a teacher, and I know there's a great potential with that program. How can someone or students be trained in becoming some type of advocate and using the same type of model, a restorative justice for the public school system?
Well, again, we do receive direct referrals from the Baltimore City School Police, but there are opportunities for your students to become involved in the program regarding volunteering. And you can reach me at the website that was given, and
which is www.clrep.org.
And I would be more than happy to connect with you and come out to your school.
Osiris, thank you for the call. He mentioned restorative justice, and Leslie Wright, you talked about that earlier in the show also. Mark Friedenthal, when I think of restorative justice, I think of something that very much involves the offender and the victim working out some kind of restorative justice, something that restores the victim who has been wronged. I didn't hear that in this process. Tell me whether the victim gets enough attention in teen court.
Well, they don't. I mean, the truth is, most of the cases, there are no victims in teen court at all. But most of the cases are not victim crimes. Most of them are crimes that are victimless crimes, or delinquent acts, I should say. That's one piece of the puzzle that isn't addressed, although for the restorative piece, the kids themselves and the experience they have facing their peers and having to answer questions about what they did and their involvement in each act and having to answer those questions before a jury really is restorative in its own sense. Unfortunately, I can't speak to the victim side of it because they don't really are not involved in that program. But the cases are diverted because of the different levels, as Mr. Potashnik said, and they make that determination at a level far different from where we are in teen court.
Gavin Potashnik, we've talked on Midday about the effort in the legislature between the Hogan administration and the legislature for justice reinvestment, examining sentencing and corrections policies to reduce the number of inmates in Maryland prisons, reinvesting those savings into strategies to keep nonviolent offenders from returning to prison. Does teen court fit into this same philosophy? And, I mean, are there savings from teen court that can be reinvested into some other services or ways of addressing violations by young people?
Absolutely. I think that any time that we look to a big government agency like the Department of Juvenile Services to handle nonviolent offenses, when that could be essentially outsourced to a diversion process that not only works but is effective, translates into a lot of savings for the state. And I think that, the Department of Juvenile Services definitely realizes that. And, you know, they have invested in numerous diversion options for youth. So I think it definitely does. I mean, as you had mentioned, it can cost upwards of $88,000 a year to house a youth in a detention center. And unfortunately, most youth in the city start out their contacts with the department through nonviolent offenses. So if we're able to effectuate change at that level, then that will absolutely translate into big savings for the state.
Is anybody keeping track of the savings? Do we know? I mean, is somebody toting up what impact Teen Court is having?
I am sure out there is some government auditor who is looking into this, especially with the renewed focus on justice and restorative justice. So I'm sure someplace there is.
Your faith in government is inspiring.
Since I work for government, and my faith is there.
Bethany is calling us from Baltimore. Bethany, a quick question. We're almost out of time.
I'm sorry. I was just wondering, how are the juvenile cases determined to go to teen court? And about the funding, how is all of this funded? And that was my question. I can take it off.
Okay, great. We touched on those earlier, but Leslie, why don't you give us the funding question?
Sure. Our teen court is actually operated under a nonprofit. And so we actually go out and raise the funds ourselves through private foundations or other funding sources. And as far as eligibility, there is a criteria that we have. And if that youth meets that criteria, then they can be diverted to the program.
Well, Gavin Potashnick, I know you talked about this earlier, but is there a sort of a crystal bright way to describe to someone who doesn't know about teen court what kind of case teen court can address? Is there something for Bethany to hold on to that's a simple way of understanding how you and the state's attorney's office decide this is a case for teen court?
Well, like everything else in law, it starts with the criteria. So we look at the criteria and we look at the crime and we determine whether or not that child will be appropriate for the program. And in some cases, it's not. Sometimes we have to do some investigation to determine whether or not there's a larger problem with the youth that needs to be addressed from the department that the diversion option just can't handle. I wish I could tell you that there is a bright line magic bullet that can tell us who we divert and who we don't. But really, a lot of it has to come down to an individual prosecutor's gut check to determine, you know, whether or not it's appropriate for that situation. And in some situations, it just isn't. But, you know, I'm happy to report that over the past year, since I've been the chief of the juvenile division, we have increased our referrals to Teen Court and other diversion programs, and I think it's working.
We are down to 1 minute, and Mark Friedenthal, I'm going to give you that last time to tell us what it is that you think people should know about teen court that they don't.
Well, I think it's a great opportunity to divert cases away from the juvenile court. It's a great opportunity to volunteer, to see youth in action. They are very intuitive, as I said before, and the cases, although difficult, are really cases that are based on kids who are normal kids who maybe made a mistake. They get to face their peers, and it's a wonderful experience. I welcome anyone who's interested to come down and watch us in action. It's a great time.
Well, I'm grateful to all of you for giving us some insight into how this works. Leslie Wright is Director of City Programs for the Citizenship Law-Related Education Program, which oversees Maryland's teen court system. Their website, where you can learn more, is www.clrep.org. Mark Friedenthal is Assistant Public Defender in the Baltimore City Juvenile Court Division. Gavin Potashnick is Chief of the Juvenile Division of the Baltimore City State's Attorney's Office. And I want to thank our listeners for listening and for participating. It's been an interesting hour. Tune in tomorrow. We'll talk about Governor Hogan's massive blight elimination project with Baltimore Housing Commissioner Paul Graziano and Ellington Churchill Jr., Deputy Secretary of the Maryland Department of Housing and Community Development. I'm Sheila Cast. If you are still digging out from the snow, be careful. Go slow. Stay healthy so you can be with us again tomorrow. Here and Now is next.
Midday is produced by Maureen Harvey and Connor Graham. The show is engineered by Luke Spicknall. Music produced by Jeff Truman and High Gravity Sounds. Midday podcasts and live streaming are available at WYPR.org or on demand using the WYPR app. This is WYPR, your NPR news station.